Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Margie Pabst. Welcome to Caregiver Speak, the first online support group created by and for caregivers like you and sponsored by eCareDiary.com. I'm Marjorie Pabst, your host and moderator. I am the co-author of Enrich Your Caregiving Journey, a book of tools and tips for caregivers. The purpose of Caregiver Speak is to deal with issues that caregivers face and to hear from caregivers like you who face or have faced these issues. Over the course of our shows, you've heard from a variety of caregivers with different perspectives on the challenges that you face. Today's show is no different. Our topic is romance and the caregiver, a topic rarely mentioned, but one we think that many of you face. We're exploring this issue in all its aspects with two caregivers, John and Sue. And we'd love to hear from you later in the show. So please give us a call at 347-857-3399. Or lodge your question or comment on social media. We'd love to hear from you. Welcome, John and Sue. It's great to have you both today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Several caregivers suggested we discuss the many aspects of human love and the need for intimacy as it affects caregivers with spouses, friends, parents, well, really everyone. The aspects of this topic can range from having enough time for personal love and intimacy with your spouse to dealing with the need for love during a chronic illness, particularly when a spouse has Alzheimer's or dementia and that person, you know, no longer recognizes you. These, we think, are issues that many, many people out there listening today are facing. So, Sue, let's start with you. You are just a treasure trove of information. You volunteer, and I know you assist caregivers on a daily basis. And in addition, you are a caregiver yourself for your husband who has Alzheimer's. So tell us about a couple of your experiences on this topic.
Well, I will say in one of the groups that I belong to or work with, as a support group, I broached the subject, and I was amazed at the lively conversation that ensued. There were all kinds of different opinions and all kinds of different situations that had occurred, from one being where the spouse is in a facility, and, you know, how do you arrange time to have some private time? And do you arrange time, and are they receptive to it? The other is the issue of people with memory disorders. Do they really know who you are? Are they really capable of following through with the romantic interlude? And how do you really feel about it? If you are familiar with the movie The Notebook,
yes.
Kim Garner, and I'm trying to think of who the woman was in it, they were dancing and having just a lovely, lovely moment together, and then all of a sudden she didn't know him anymore.
Yes.
From the man's point of view, or situation. A lot of men of a certain age take Viagra and Cialis, and my experience with that is sometimes it interacts with the other medications that they're taking, and they can get either confused or agitated, and not a good situation. So, our needs are, basic needs are breathing, then food, and then sex. And that need doesn't necessarily diminish. We had one gentleman that said, you know, if he could just get in bed with his wife and hold her, it would be so comforting. Not necessarily the whole intimacy, but just that touch. Just that touch where you connect.
Well, Sue, you know, I think you've given our listeners and all of us a broad view of all the different aspects of this. And I thank you so much for kind of laying it out there for us in terms of the different options and aspects.
I was going to get Moncama a Steelers shirt as like a welcome gift. I just want to make sure you weren't doing that.
Hello, I'm sorry. Who is on the line?
You don't even have to give anything. You brought him here, but I was just going to, I thought, you know. Yeah, because he'll be there. He'll be getting there right when we get there.
I don't know who that is.
I don't know either. I think we'll move on to John. John, tell us about the situation that you were faced with and any reaction to what Sue has just said.
Well, I agree with everything that Sue said, and you know, I think that you know, I actually have a perspective that is both from the caregiver as well as the care recipient's perspective. So, when I was caring from the caregiver perspective, when I was caring for my father, I actually met my wife, who is also the co-founder of Your Diary, Susan, and my father was in the early stages of Parkinson's disease when we first met. But obviously, it's a degenerative disease, and I would say about a year after we got married, he really started down a rapid decline. About a year later was when he passed away, so 2 years after we got married. But it was very interesting to sort of be starting a romance when you're in the early stages of caregiving and then to have that romance bloom for yourself. And then with all the stresses of caregiving, we actually wanted to start a family. And we had a hard time getting pregnant, and they say that one of the things that drives sometimes can drive that can be the stress around it. So it was a real, very difficult, and I would say, you know, interesting experience. But I think one of the things that Sue brought up that's really true is relationships, whether or not you're the caregiver or the care recipient, are a very important part of everybody's lives. And I learned that through that. And obviously, having a supportive spouse was so important during the caregiving experience, but it obviously also impacted our lives in ways that we didn't expect.
Yes. In terms of the care recipient, John, what did you see in your father needing? Sue mentioned touch, and you know, I'm a big toucher, and so maybe I'm just responding to that. But is that something that he really wanted, just to be touched, to be held?
Yeah, well, it was very interesting. My father had a long my mother died when I was in high school, and he was in a long term relationship. I guess you can call her a girlfriend or a partner or whatever you wanted to call her. For the entire time he was sick. And so that was an important part of his life, and we wanted to make sure that he could continue to see her, which became harder and harder as his mobility declined. And she had arthritis and other issues, so she had a hard time getting around. So I would, you know, help him get over to her house so that they could see each other, and, you know, he would, you know, stay the night sometimes with her, things like that. So that was a very important part of his life and an important part of sort of keeping him happy and fulfilled.
Yes. And, you know, I think I'm going to just make the assumption, I've made this assumption, by the way, that, you know, sometimes our care recipients aren't needing that, or we just forget to ask, or, you know, we don't provide the opportunity, like you say. I mean, you made the effort to get them together. and how important that is to and for the well-being of our care partners. So
One of the things that came up was with the progression of dementia was the recognition of who your spouse is and your relationship. And I did talk with an administrator of a home and a large facility, and they allow couples to use the hospice rooms if they're available, or they train their staff to be cognizant of doors that are closed and to not politely without just barging in. Another factor when a spouse is in a facility of some kind, one of the women had said that her spouse developed a loving relationship with another woman there. He no longer recognized her. He knew she was a nice person, but it was difficult for her to sit there and have them hand-holding and with an arm around each other you know, to carry on the visit. And then she resolved it with the fact that here he was happy, he felt loved, he felt protected and comfortable, and she'd rather have that than for him to be distressed in that situation. Another one of our people in the support group said, you know, you need to be aware that the time may come when your spouse thinks that your daughter or son is their spouse because they're living in their 20s or 30s,
yes,
and your daughter or son looks like you did at that time. So it can be very confusing for them, and it can be a little unsettling for the child.
Yes, I'd never thought about that, but that you're absolutely right, because Alzheimer's and dementia patients often look back to the past. That's where the clarity lies. When you work with caregivers and their families, Sue, is this a normal thing that happens, that people are given counseling as to what to anticipate from their loved one in these areas?
No, not at all. Not at all. There's counseling for other aspects of your life, but it's a rare instance where the counselor or the physician, whoever it is, will bring up the subject of intimacy and, you know, what the situations are that might occur.
Yes.
But it's not a topic that's generally brought up.
Well, maybe this radio program today will be the start of encouraging more understanding of this issue on the part of professional caregivers as well as family caregivers. And when you mentioned the large facility also, Sue, that you had talked with an administrator, is that a best practice in facilities, or would you think that this administrator was an unusual person to be aware of closed doors and the need for people to have intimacy?
Oftentimes it's expected, anticipated, that part of your life is over because you've reached a certain age.
Yeah.
And so I think that this person just had a very good grasp on the human situation.
Yes, yes. Very, very interesting. You know, a book was written about last year by a Dr. Mark Lacks. It was called Treat Me, Not My Age. And you made me think of that in your comment, that often we think, well, you know, older people don't have sex, which is as far from the truth as anything. So,
well, we
John?
Live near the villages, so we know that with all the articles and you know, television, video, whatever,
yes,
interviews with people there, that's not the case. So
yes, yes,
they've dispelled that rumor.
Yeah. Well, it happened on this show as well. We were dispelling that rumor. John, what other aspects of your father's care and so on really related to this area? And do you have other experiences with other caregivers?
Well, I don't know if I have other experiences with other caregivers, but you know, this is, I mean, I think that you raised a really good point, which is there is this assumption that you reach a certain age and you no longer have sex or interest in intimacy. And you know, I can tell you from the experience with my father, nothing could be further from the truth. That was a very, you know, being in a relationship and, you know, was a very important part of his life, and it was something that, you know, made him, you know, Parkinson's is, unless you have Lewy body syndrome, is almost the opposite of dementia. So you have a person whose mind is fully functioning and is, you know, sharp as a tack, but their body is deteriorating around them, so they can't do the things they used to do, you know, even, you know, walking across the room and things like that become very, very difficult. And so the idea that he could still be together with the woman he loved was very important to him.
Yes, yes. I remember my mother telling me many years ago that sex happens between your ears. And so, you know, with a person who's got a brain, who is fully functioning brain, they're going to have those feelings just as intensely as they've ever have. So that's a terrific point, John.
Well, I remember an interview that was done on television with Christopher Reeve and his wife, Dana. And even though he was totally paralyzed, he smiled shyly and said, "We manage."
That's terrific. That's a great example, Sue. So, you know, we always try to provide some tips for our caregivers, both our professional and family caregivers on this show. And so I think we've really opened up the issue. And now I think people would appreciate some tips or tools that you all can suggest for providing space and time for caregivers, for their caregivers and their care partners. You've already mentioned a couple, but do you have some others, either one of you?
Well, I know one thing is unfortunately, a lot of times with the women, for some reason they seem to think ugly haircuts are what grandma needs, or, you know, baggy clothes are what grandma needs, and I don't know of a woman alive that doesn't want to feel feminine. So there are nursing homes and other facilities where, you know, hairdressers and barbers come in and spruce people up so that they feel a positive image. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I just recently learned that Dr. Ruth had written a book. Yeah, so I'm kind of wondering what she has to say on the subject.
Oh, that's terrific. Do you happen to know the name of it, the title of it, Sue?
How to Care for Your Loved One Without Getting Overwhelmed and Without Doing It All Yourself, Dr. Ruth's Guide for the Alzheimer's Caregiver.
Okay, terrific. Would you say that one more time so our listeners could get that? They can probably Google Dr. Ruth, but go ahead.
It's Dr. Ruth's Guide for the Alzheimer's Caregiver, How to Care for Your Loved One Without Getting Overwhelmed and Without Doing It All Yourself.
Terrific. Thank you. And I loved your tip about helping our care partners feel feminine, and I guess we should extend that to feeling masculine as well, and feeling, you know, to help both women and men look and feel their best, even when they're ill.
Yeah, and that's interesting. You know, one of the things that was very important to my father was shaving every day. That made him feel, it made him feel, I think, handsome. It also made him feel, you know, like he was sort of a normal person. And so that was one of the things that we would do for him, was to shave every day and to, you know, put him into, you know, the last few months of his life, he really didn't leave the house very often, but still put him into clothes that made him feel, you know, like he was sort of a functioning part of society. So that was a very important thing for him. And obviously when he went to see his, you know, his partner, obviously we always made sure he looked his best. That was very important to him. He also, interestingly enough, used to dye his hair. So we always had to make sure before he went to see his partner that his hair was dyed.
I had a friend that made us promise that when she passed on that we would make sure her roots didn't show.
But, you know, these are things that are so human. I mean, one of our big human things is we want to look good. I mean, from little kids, I mean, we're all kind of looking in the mirror and checking our hair or if our face doesn't have smudges or whatever. And so these are, you know, these kinds of tips are so obvious, and yet they're not for us to remember with our loved ones. I want to just stop for a moment here, see if we have anybody on the line who'd like to ask either John or Sue or both of them a question today. Is anybody on the line? Hello? Please give us a call at 347-857-3399 or post a comment or a question for us on ecurediary.com or on social media. We'd love to hear from you. I have a question here that's probably the most sensitive because it includes some of our cultural norms and things that maybe we grow up with respect to our religion, our respective religion or value systems. And that question is, how can a spouse deal with the issue of the need for intimacy and the fact that his or her loved one is alive only physically but not at all mentally? What do you all think about that?
Well, we had a discussion a couple days ago, not about necessarily dealing with it, but dealing with other people's attitude, and it had to do with attitudes towards women and the chauvinistic, you must be, you know, lonely, et cetera, and here I am. And that can be a little bit insulting.
Mm-hmm. Insulting. Tell us more, Sue.
You know, as a young woman, a young married woman, in various situations in business or whatever, you don't necessarily like to be hit on by a man. An uninvited overture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a situation of a divorced woman, a widowed woman, and another person dealing with a spouse that had dementia. And there is that attitude out there that you must be an easy target, kind of.
Yes, and you need sympathy and all of this sort of thing, and then that leads to them surmising other things as well. Yes.
Yeah, a little compromising situations.
Uh-huh, yeah. John, how about you? Any thoughts on this area?
Well, I mean, my experience has been more with someone who was mentally there but not physically at the end, but I still think, you know, the mental aspects of relationships are very important, and knowing that that person who's important for you still loves you and is still there for you, and, you know, even, you know, if you're not able to have an intimate relationship, there are things, you know, you can do in terms of getting together with that person and, you know, spending time with them, you know, holding hands and cuddling and all those types of things that I still think are very important if you're dealing with someone who may be, you know, suffering from Parkinson's or MS or those mm-hmm. types of conditions that are more physically debilitating than mentally debilitating. And I think that those are things that you need to be very cognizant of if you're caring for someone in that situation.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I'm predicting that the opposite of John's situation where the person is still physically alive but hasn't been with this world, if you will, and not recognizing anyone for a long time, just, you know, what is it that a spouse, how can spouses think about their need for intimacy and yet continue to be faithful to their spouse? I mean, it's a tough situation, but I kind of think, given how much we have Alzheimer's and dementia in this world, that books of this nature will probably be emerging more and more. Any other comments from the two of you on this?
I would say that if you're caring for a loved one who, you know, that is, you know, in need, you know, remember that people do, this is a part of being human, you know, wanting intimacy and if you can, sexual relations, that you know, you need yes. to be very cognizant of that and where appropriate, try and accommodate them and help them with their relationships. I mean, I think that was one of the things I learned with my father was how important it was for him to continue to be able to spend time with his partner. It really made a big difference for him, and he was always in a much better mood after he'd done so. So I think that's one thing that, you know, Sue mentioned it earlier, there is this idea, well, you reach a certain age where that's not important to you anymore, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And we all know that healing is psychosocial even more so than physical. And so mood makes a difference. Your point is very well taken, John. Well, believe it or not, we're coming close to the end of our time together. And I want to thank you both so much for your insight and willingness to share all these experiences, particularly the personal ones. Do either of you have anything more to say before we sign off?
Well, we have one group that arranged a dance, and they invited the students from a local college to come and help so that there were enough partners and there were helpers to kind of lead the dances.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an opportunity to, there were some dances that were kind of, you know, the romantic music, and then there were other dances that were more athletic, and
yes.
it was just a good time for everybody, and I think, you know, it was a Valentine situation, so that made it more special.
Oh, that's a terrific idea to organize something like that. That is a great idea, Sue. Well, I want to thank you both so very much for talking about the romance and the caregiver today. We would love to hear from all of you listeners out there. Please join me, Marjorie Pabst, for our next Caregiver and Physician Conversation show on Tuesday, November 27, when I'll be interviewing Dr. Michael Weiner on how you can get involved in groundbreaking Alzheimer's research trials. You won't want to miss this one. Again, this is Marjorie Pabst. You can access my information at www.pivotalcrossings.com. And again, thanks very much to eCare Diary and John and Sue. Goodbye.
Bye now.
Bye.